Every year during the month of October, groups around the country work to help raise awareness about domestic violence. It's an opportunity to mourn those lost, celebrate those who survived, and educate our community about ways to end the violence. This is especially poignant with the recent killing of a University of Utah student who was gunned down Monday night by an ex-boyfriend. Joining me today to talk more about this and what we can do to stop more tragedies like the one in Utah is Dr. Ashley King. She is the FACES Medical Director at St. Luke's. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
For people who aren't aware, explain what FACES is.
So FACES of Hope is a multidisciplinary organization that really has been in place in the community for a number of years, but has really flown under the radar until fairly recently. It's a pretty unique clinic setup in that we are able to provide acute and follow-up care for victims of violence, but we really aim to provide full wraparound services for those victims. So beyond just meeting their medical needs, people who are seen at FACES are able to meet with prosecutors and law enforcement if they choose to work with those people. We have crisis counseling available, an empowerment class, support groups. We really work together to help make sure that any needs that a victim may have, we're able to meet for them and support them during that time of crisis.
And it's so critical that it goes beyond just if they need medical care.
Correct.
So tell me about if someone is in a relationship that they don't feel safe in, what can they do? Because I think sometimes they think they're powerless.
We are incredibly fortunate in the Treasure Valley to have just a wealth of resources available for Ada County residents and then also Canyon County residents. Specifically at FACES, people are able to come and simply have safety planning. Perhaps they recognize that there are unsafe tendencies in their relationship, but aren't sure that they're ready to leave or don't know how to do that safely. They can come and sit down and speak with someone about where they're at in their relationship, what their feelings are, and what they're interested in perhaps doing in the not-too-distant future. People at FACES are able to then help really support that person in their decision, help provide them with perhaps a safe phone if they need to, temporary housing, have a crisis counseling opportunity to really help talk through what they're going through emotionally at that time and what perhaps their fears are about leaving that relationship, even when they recognize it's unsafe.
I think that's interesting, what you call putting a safety plan in place. I've not heard that before.
And a safety plan is really put in place to help that person kind of collect a few of the necessary items that they may need to leave a relationship safely, whether that is a Hope phone provided by the center that is untraceable and has no kind of apps on it that can be used to track someone's whereabouts. Perhaps setting aside a small amount of cash, important documents such as passport or birth certificate, so that if they need to leave in an urgent situation, they have those truly important kind of documents and pieces of paper with them to help make that transition perhaps a little bit easier.
So what about, you know, friends or family members who might be concerned, right? And they're like, you know, maybe they see the signs even before the person within the relationship. What are some key points or things for friends and family to know about or potentially do?
I think that's a great question. Oftentimes when friends or family perhaps start seeing some of those traits or start hearing just small snippets about the relationship that causes them some concern, I think one of the most important pieces of information, be non-judgmental, be supportive, and really listen to that person. Oftentimes, because of the cycle of violence, that person has been made to feel so small over a period of months or perhaps even years, and they may not feel capable or confident enough to leave that relationship. And by asking, why are you staying? Why have you stayed? It really puts the blame on the victim rather than the abuser. So instead of asking that question, ask how you can be of support, if there's anything they might need. Perhaps offer them resources if they've mentioned that they need a chance just to kind of use a safe computer or a phone, make some calls, do a little research online about local resources. Make yourself available to that person and be a strong support. But please, whenever possible, try not to put any blame on that person for staying in a relationship, because it is a very complex relationship dynamic.
I'm speaking with Dr. Ashley King. She is the FACES Medical Director at St. Luke's. We're talking about domestic violence and what we can do to help those suffering, as well as raising awareness during Domestic Violence Awareness Month. You know, Dr. King, I think a lot of people automatically just assume that when we talk about domestic violence, that the victims are always women. And A, that's not the case. Men can be victims. But I wonder, too, if there's so much more stigma maybe around a man being a victim of violence. So what kind of resources, you know, are out there for them? And on top of that, do we see men here in our area coming in?
Again, a great point to bring up. You know, the CDC really estimates that 1 in 3 to 1 in 4 women is the victim of some type of intimate partner violence in their lifetime. But that number is actually as high as 1 in 7 men. We suspect this is grossly underreported in the community. And oftentimes, when there are reports, there's always a concern of who the kind of perpetrator of violence was in a situation. And oftentimes, mm-hmm. even when the male is the victim, they may end up getting some blame cast on them simply because it's pretty easy to look at a 250-pound man and perhaps a 140-pound woman and say, well, I see where the power lies here, when that's certainly not the case. At FACES, we do offer domestic violence forensic exams for male victims. I do follow-up care for men, and I actually think that especially the mental health piece, finding that good crisis counseling opportunity and perhaps a long-term counseling opportunity is incredibly important to that person to help regain their sense of kind of control and safety in their own life.
Well, and when you bring up the point about don't ever blame the victim, right, going back to that piece about don't ask them why they're staying, do you tend to see with male victims that it's a lot more like mental and emotional and verbal abuse versus the physical abuse? And I ask that because, you know, that also just has a slow cycle of chipping away at someone's self-esteem.
Correct. And I think oftentimes we do see that financial control, isolation, the jealousy, and perhaps tracking someone via phone or other GPS. We certainly do see that for our male victims, but physical abuse is very commonly a part of that picture as well.
And then it goes back to exactly what you said, though, that the assumption is that a man has to be the perpetrator because a lot of times, as you said, men are bigger. How would you tell a man to come in to FACES so that he truly is believed, right? Or wherever he goes to try to get that help instead of some of the blame being placed on him?
So we have really fabulous law enforcement support here in the Treasure Valley. And I think that overall, they do a phenomenal job of really helping tease out not only, you know, this one incident, but let's look at a little bit more of a historical picture in the relationship to help identify who the primary aggressor actually is in a situation. Certainly, law enforcement is always a place where you are welcome to kind of initiate that relationship kind of with the legal system or perhaps with Faces of Hope. People can also simply walk into our doors. We're open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday and there to really support our community. So you are welcome to come in as a scheduled appointment with a phone call ahead or simply walk in and let us help determine what services we may be able to help offer you in that moment.
And, you know, Monday evening, the tragedy at the University of Utah where a college student was walking back from a night class, getting into her car, and was gunned down by an ex-boyfriend she'd been dating for a month, had broken off the relationship about 2 weeks ago. Domestic violence in young adults and even in teenagers. We had a very prominent case in the Treasure Valley about at least a decade ago when a teenager was killed by a boyfriend. This happens. We don't talk about it that much.
It's true.
Do we need to be more aware of it?
We do. And I think when you look back even over the last 6 months, the number of news stories that have unfortunately ended in homicide, this is something that we are seeing more and more of. And while it's been happening for years, I think now we're finally at the point where we're calling it what it is, which is domestic violence that's ending in homicide and really highlighting the risk that this relationship carries. Strangulation is actually a very common part of what I see when I see victims of domestic violence. And there's a very scary statistic out there that if you have been strangled by an intimate partner even one time, you are at 800% increased risk of being killed by that partner in the future.
And you have direct experience when we talk about teens and violence.
I do.
Can you tell me about that?
So one of the things I've definitely noticed in recent years is with the kind of overwhelming social media presence and just kind of use of cell phones at all times, that's actually a really common way that we see some of these relationships becoming more and more dangerous. There are a number of apps that can be put on your phone that are actually tracking software that we really do need to be aware of, as well as just monitoring someone else's social media presence. Are they putting down their partner? Are they perhaps sharing information that someone else wanted to be kept private? Are they posting pictures that are inappropriate or perhaps make someone feel uncomfortable? And we certainly see that social media has a very big role in the younger stages of domestic violence and some of those early behaviors.
So it's incredibly important then for parents to be very engaged on what's going on in social media with their kids.
Without a doubt. And really having, you know, good transparency with your children, what they're posting online, who they're friends with on various social media sites, and really knowing, you know, what are they putting out into the world that realistically we know can never fully be deleted.
And very quickly, you do have an event coming up on November 7th. Can you tell me about that?
We do. On November 7th, Faces of Hope is hosting their annual Light of Hope event. It's at Jump from 5:30 to 7:30. Tickets are available on the Faces of Hope website, and it's really an opportunity to come help raise money. There will be an auction and really just help support not only the center, but the work that we're doing, some of our sexual assault forensic examiner nurse team, as well as some of the other projects that we have going on community-wide.
Well, I thank you for coming in today and all of the work that you do.
Thank you for having me.
My guest, Dr. Ashley King, the medical director of Faces at St. Luke's. We've been talking about domestic violence and domestic violence awareness.